This did not work the way I thought it would.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and old lang syne?
Happy New Year, everyone. This is the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your loving host, Todd Conklin, and this is the first annual call-in show, and I want to wish you a very, very happy New Year. I hope this is the best year ever for you guys. If you're listening within the sound of earshot of my voice, I want you to have the best year you can possibly ever have. Got it? That's a direct order. Before we go much further, let's get started. The year's going to be amazing, and it's going to start out with several people who called in with either comments or questions or discussions, and this is the product that we came up with. So let's get right out of the chute by listening first to young Bob Edwards. Bob called to include himself in this discussion, and I asked Bob one question. What is it that you think we're learning about this new view that makes a difference operationally at the pointy end of the stick? And here's what Bob said.
I would say that as we go on this human and organizational performance journey, I'm finding that we need patience. We need to be patient with ourselves. We need to be patient with our leaders. We need to be patient with the people that work for us because we're trying to change, and change is not easy. So I think that's probably the most encouraging thing I could say to people and organizations as they try to make this change happen, which we do need to do, right? I mean, our option is to leave it like it is, which I don't think any of us are satisfied with. So to make it better, I think we have to show some patience with each other.
So a question came in around how do we actually create sustainable change for leadership? What do you think about? Because that's actually, Bob, between you and I, that's a pretty good question. I mean, that's a thoughtful question.
Yes, it is. Because we've seen this happen, right? We've seen some sites that made a lot of progress. We don't have to mention any names, but we've seen some sites that have made a lot of progress with the new view. And then the leadership changes and it goes off the rails because the new leadership doesn't have this new understanding. So they go back to what they take the site back to what they know, which is the blame culture. It's the I will hold people accountable and show you that I can run this ship a tight with an iron fist, right? And the problem is that the people that have seen the better way are now in a real tough place because they know what better looks like, and they don't want to go back to what they had before.
I agree with you 100%. How do we create sustainable, I would actually, this is my word, structural change so that leaders have to lead differently?
Right. So I know one thing that helped us at our site is when we actually went in and started deliberately changing, this may sound a little goofy, but deliberately changing policy so that our policy was building in this new view. So I talked to you about how we redid our safety policy at our site, and we used an operational learning approach, really it was very thoughtful about it and took this new view as really sort of the foundation for it. And we went from 13 pages of gotcha rules to 3 pages of how to lead, inspire, and coach safety. So we're beginning to build it into the actual fabric of our policy.
So you heard Bob, and he had lots to say, and I actually think that's pretty profound stuff. Listen carefully, because there's lots there. In the midst of all that Bob interview, here comes Dave Christensen, who sends a very nice, very detailed email, and he wants to talk a little bit about something Daniel Hummerdahl said in a recent episode last year around the notion of building relationships and creativity. So let's insert Dave Christensen. You know him, you love him, and he's going to talk a little tiny bit about relational learning, and that'll help everything sort of make a complete circle, and we'll see if there's a response to it. Hold on. Here's Dave Christensen.
And so this is why I was excited that Daniel was talking about things like appreciative inquiry and co-constructing futures together. And this is very much what I'm hoping to make real for folks.
Well, tell us more about that, because I think that's really interesting.
Well, this actually is something that Sidney Decker had recommended that I take a look at, this Taos Institute program and the joint PhD concept with other universities in Europe, and Leiden University in the Netherlands is one of them. And the area of social constructionism, this idea of being able to co-create or build our futures together, and how we might go about doing those things, is just fascinating. It's just fun, because what you do is you end up bringing people together, and not necessarily to come to consensus on something, but actually to have people relate what it is that's important to them, and from their local rationality, why things make a difference, and get a deeper understanding and appreciation of different perspectives. And this is what Daniel Keedon was bringing more people together with different perspectives, what Weick has called in his writings on sense-making, requisite variety. And that way you have many different ways of looking at things. And from that, not necessarily do you need to agree with each other on everything, but you can now begin to build something new and have something emerge from that better understanding of one another, and move forward in areas of safety, which are also interdependent with quality and production and everything else that we are trying to do.
Excellent. And where do you see, when you bring together this palette of many colors to paint, where do you see the intersection points existing? Is it at the operator level? Is it at the leadership level? Is it even within the organization? Is it entirely an academic exercise? Oh, that sounded really professional, that big pause there. 'cause it strikes me that sense-making exists everywhere within the organizational structure.
Yes.
And how do we sort of unify that sense-making intra-organizationally, as opposed to sense-making at the firefighter level, sense-making at the incident commander level, sense-making at the senior leader level? I mean, where does that take us?
Yeah, I can see where there might be questions like this from a lot of folks, because we've been really depending upon our hierarchical structures and ways that we have organized ourselves in the past. And we want to continue to rely on those things to help us to make sense of things. How does this fit for the incident commander or the CEO or the worker on the floor or the firefighter on the fire line? And I think that what is being recommended here is getting all of these different people together to talk about things that are important to them from those different perspectives. And that way you cross these boundaries and you begin to appreciate how these different folks feel about things and what these different stakeholders have that they feel is threatened. Like for some organizations, these hierarchies are really interested in command and control and being able to be predictable. And so the whole idea sometimes for many people, as Daniel points out in one of his writings on safety differently, that the whole idea is like injecting uncertainty, because you just don't know what people are going to say. And so this can be something that's very frightening for many folks, and also having it coming from inside the organization, when people have been relying on things to come from outside the organization can be another thing that's frightening for folks. And so getting past our fears and opening up dialogue and actually having facilitated dialogue so that ground rules are plain and simple and upheld, and then having people be able to just really talk with a purpose in mind, not just venting or defending their great ideas and just can't wait till their turn to come up with an argument against others, but suspending judgment and really looking for understanding. I think we can be mature that way if we intend to be that way.
Which then completely begs the question, what was Daniel Hummerdahl talking about? And how does this all fit together with this notion of relational leadership? Dave was great, and I love where he's thinking. It's actually really, really appealing to me at a bunch of levels. But it meant that Daniel had to play, and so let's bring in Daniel Hummerdahl. And the question I'm going to ask him, the question that starts this whole thing, is that Dave Christensen is really interested in this appreciative nature of how we look at performance reliability. And he specifically asked the question about something that a guy named David Cooper Ryder from Case Western University, probably 20 years, maybe a little less than that, started called appreciative inquiry. Now, if you don't know what appreciative inquiry is, it's basically a method you use to identify problem solving, and you do it not by starting from what's bad, but in fact, by asking this question, based upon your past history doing the work you do, when this X, whatever X is, has been successful, why was it successful? What took place? And more importantly, how did we make this iteration of this project, this event, this problem successful? And Cooper Ryder digs into this deeply. It's completely worth looking at, especially if you're interested in this new view stuff, because it's a much different way, a much more creative way, to solve problems. So let's bring Daniel in. And the question I'm going to ask him is this. What do you think about appreciative inquiry?
Yes, I like it. It is it's a very powerful perspective to think about how we can manage the likelihood for success or understand the reasons for success as is the basic idea behind appreciative inquiry. Traditional safety is obviously sort of the opposite of that, where you manage the probability for failure rather. So I think it's one of those areas where there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. When you apply appreciative inquiry to safety, what happens is that you sort of need to shift your focus away from safety and start focusing on the stuff that is working well, which is the safety two perspective. But maybe it's better to just talk about work in that space. When I read appreciative inquiry, I was struck that this is a perspective that is sort of coming and has emerged in a range of fields. Appreciative inquiry comes from the field of organizational development, organizational management. In psychology, they have positive psychology, which is, mental health is more than the absence of mental illness. Antonovsky wrote something in the early 80s around how physical health is more than the absence of illness or sickness. There is a book called Positive Deviance, which is more of a sociological tool to discover what is helpful, what is working for people. Let's identify those strategies and work with the success or the positive outcomes. So I think appreciative inquiry is one field of many that we can use to find a different perspective that is much more positive to engage with people and organizations to improve work.
I think that's good. That's really good. And I've used appreciative inquiry for, a long time. Because I come out of the org psych, org development side of the house, right? Uh-huh. And I'm always amazed at how effective it is with a technical crowd. So you would think that it needs like a room full of social workers would be really good with appreciative inquiry, right? But I can take a room full of physicists, and using AI, I can actually probably do the best value work with those physicists that I could possibly do in the least amount of time. Not that I want to do the work as efficiently as possible, because it's developmental work, so you sort of have to take the group where they are. But it's a very good way with technical people to kind of move them beyond a long, long discussion of how bad the world currently is. And taking that discussion of how bad we are off the table and starting the discussion at a sort of a general assumption, we all know we suck, and how can we move forward and improve, has really been very valuable to me historically and professionally. I'm interested, and you've been spending a lot of time with hard hat workers. I'm interested in what you think the cut on this appreciative inquiry approach would be with a more of a technical crowd.
I agree completely with you that it's so easy to become bogged down in all the problems that we have in organizations. And the more you talk about the problems, the bigger they become. And what you try to do is just to fix those things. They will inherently push you into a reactive mode. And I just as a side note, I increasingly think about reactivity and creativity as polar opposites, not reactive and proactive, but reactive and creative. Because proactive also implies that, you know, you use your knowledge of the past and try to just stop that from repeating itself. Whereas creative is where you're free to create whatever future that you're interested in. And the AI tools are really good at that and say, okay, what kind of workplace do you want to create? When I've run my focus groups on some mine sites and construction sites, one of the most interesting questions that I've used is, you know, if you could have $50,000 to improve this place, to make it a nicer place to work, a more efficient place to work for you and your colleagues, how would you spend them? And you use that as a starting point to see, you know, what is it that people, you know, what do they dream about? What do they want to see? And it can be anything from, you know, fixing things and just doing more radical things about the tooling systems and the manuals and the support structures that they have. But instead of focusing on you know, what's wrong with this place, which is a very negative and tedious discussion to have, just open up these opportunities and this unwritten future that is available to everyone, and let's start talking about that. I think it works as well for blue-collar workers as it does for managers and leaders of businesses.
And then along comes Brett Rogers. Now, his friends call him Smiley, and I'll give you permission right now to call him Smiley. You could also call him Mr. Smiley or Senor Simbrosa if you want to take it in a different direction. Smiley wants to ask a question that sort of lays over the top of all this, and that is, why, if we're so good at identifying and reporting, are we not better at learning? And so I took Smiley aside during the call-in program, and I said, what question, if you could ask the community, you guys, that's you listening right now, on the treadmill, in the car seat, at your desk chair, what question would you ask these guys about learning? And that's where Smiley takes off.
Guess what their question was the premise of kind of one posed in that newsletter and one that's been on a lot of minds, I think, of folks in our wildland fire agency was the, you know, we've gotten pretty decent at reporting now, especially compared to the past, and lots of reports coming out. And, you know, certainly they're mostly in the form of little written reports, you know, and emails and things like that. But it just seems like it's kind of hard to get the lessons out of those reports into the being practiced in the field. And so basically you see it as being learned, those lessons really being learned.
So, yeah. So the question I'd ask you is, why do you think it's difficult for people to learn something? So the information's out there in whatever form it's in. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good.
What about the application of that learning into practice? What do you think's holding off from an applied standpoint? What do you think's holding off?
You know, kind of the only thing I can go back to a little bit is just that it seems like if you get a report from somewhere else, it's just trying to make it salient to your own immediate group, even though it seems like, you know, everybody's doing kind of the same kind of work. But
yeah.
It seems like if it happens with that, even if it's not maybe directly in your working group, but say your neighbor just down the road, people that you're familiar with, you tend to look at that and see to learn from that versus somebody a couple states away, say.
Do you think it's too much to ask workers to apply knowledge to their world? And I don't mean that to sound preachy or like, I don't know, too much to ask sounds judgy. I don't mean judgy. I mean, is that difficult? Is that hard to do for you guys?
You know, I don't think it's necessarily hard to do. Just maybe we don't make a good enough effort of it. I know kind of something like we mentioned with some of the local stuff that's happened, I guess probably a little bit more of a push from leadership for everybody to kind of get out there and make sure that we're getting that information out to the folks that are actually out there getting the job done in the field, and then, you know, really more interfacing with them more. So it's not just a, you know, a little report here and extract what you can out of it, but to have the conversation, discuss it and how it really relates to their work.
So one thing I think about is how much do we involve the field in the actual process of learning? So how much are they involved in investigations, in low level, near miss, close call, good catches? I mean, are they parts of the learning activity?
You know, right now I'd say the majority of them are not. There's a few small pockets of that, and then some get kind of pulled in as subject matter experts, if you will. But it's kind of like, seems like more of an invite only.
Yeah.
On these bigger type of report type thing. You know, I think there's a lot of like the little action reviews that go on where people are just reviewing their own daily work, and it seems to be working there. You know, that's pretty informal, 100% involvement generally with, you know, the people right there doing the work. But it's these reports from elsewhere where you kind of hope that we can take lessons of mistakes that somebody else learned that maybe are back two states away and apply that to our own work. So
what are you guys doing to sort of tackle this? I mean, what are the ideas out there? Cause that's a really interesting way to look at it.
Yeah. I don't know. That's what I've kind of wondered too, if there's anybody that's kind of tackled this yet. You know, they try to implement it into formal training and stuff, but even then, you know, not everybody gets the same kind of formal training as each employee. It's just a pretty big agency with lots of people coming in and out on an annual basis. So it's a pretty big challenge.
So let's toss that one out there. Let's open that discussion up and see if other people who listen have some ideas, because I really think creativity is extra credit here. And any way we can get information to people, I don't think your guys are not willing to learn. I mean, I've worked with your guys, and that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems that the connectivity between the lesson and the actual learning, that seems to be where the weakness is. And that's something we can focus on.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. That's kind of where, you know, that's right. It seems like right now that's at the point kind of where we're at, that made progress to this point where actually people are willing to report a lot of things that maybe they wouldn't have in the past, since there's really good learning opportunities. And now it's just how to get that.
How to make that learning happen. Yeah. That's a really interesting. So let me ask you this. How much learning do you guys do from success? Now, the after action reviews are an important part. Mm-hmm. And I would actually say that's a really good success learning technique. But how much do you look at sort of how successful work is done?
You know, in this format of like the Lesson Learned Center, there's been just very few that have focused in that, you know, probably a little more of that would be good. You just don't see that much of it. It seems like most of the focus is on, you know, what people would consider a more of a negative, unintended outcome.
Well, I'll tell you, Smiley, I think this is kind of an interesting question, and it's a good problem to have, because with increased reporting comes the opportunity to learn. Now we're not talking about how do we get information into the system. Now we're talking about how we can best get the information out of the system. And my guess is, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, one size doesn't fit all. So we're going to have multiple methods to deliver this message. And we're going to have to experiment, you know, go out there and try storm, go out and prototype some ideas and get some feedback. One of the best things we could do, in my opinion, is to bring together some of your guys. Just bring them together and say, here's the problem. We're not learning from past events. How do we fix that problem? First of all, how do we phrase that? Do we know what the problem is? And then how do we fix that problem and engage them in being a part of this solution?
Yeah. Would agree with that too. That would be certainly a first step. You know, try out and see how where it goes from there, and adapt as necessary.
So Smiley's given us a little homework, whether you want it or not. I think it's actually a really compelling question, and that is, we're starting to get better information. We're definitely getting better stories, or more stories. Better seems kind of judgmental. We're starting to learn more, and people are talking more about near misses, close calls, small events, large events. They're talking about it. How do we take it to the next step, the input-output question? And, you know, I think the very best thing to do with that is first of all, to thank everybody for this show, but secondly, to sort of put this assignment on your page of things to do. Let's think about this a lot in the next year. In fact, one of our themes I think probably ought to be, how can we improve our ability to learn and improve? Because everything we do, every single accident we prevent, every safeguard we put in the system is a direct function of our ability to learn and improve. And we know that. I mean, we know that for sure. Now's the time to kind of look at that and think about how we can fix that. I want to thank Smiley so much. I want to thank Daniel so much. Definitely want to thank Dave so much. And I want to thank Bob so much. And everybody else that wrote emails and put in questions. I think I pretty much got everything included. So I feel like I've done my due diligence. This has been a great podcast. And you guys make it go. There's no question about it. You're perfect. Here's my direct commandment for you from here on. Have a great year. It's January. It's really early in the year. I hope you're not listening to this at home. Please tell me you're not. Please tell me you're listening to this in the workplace where somebody's paying for you to listen to this. That would even be better. But if you are, I'm still with you. I like you every step of the way. Until then, my friends, happy 2016. Learn something new every single day. Have some fun. And for goodness sakes, be safe.
What kind of hippie bullshit is this?